Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. Today, we have a very, very happy guest with us, Dr. Nancy Mramer. I got that right, I hope. Mramer. I did it wrong. I had it written down. Funny. Okay, so it's Mramer, and that is not to be destroyed anymore throughout this show. this is funny. But you're happy about it, so it doesn't matter, right? You're a media and health psychologist. You're a spiritual fitness coach. You're a speaker, an author. You've been awarded grants. Tell me about this grant. I think that's really neat.
Well, interesting. I do a lot of work with mind, body, and spirit wellness. And I got together with a group of my colleagues, and we received a grant to produce a DVD on hypnosis for health and healing. And, you know, I can say this because it was a DVD that was created by a committee, and the images, the visual images and the words behind those images are so very healing. I really love this DVD. Can you tell?
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice that you do. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. And I do the audio track. I do the sort of the audio hypnosis behind the images that just gently remind the body how to be healthy and how to be well. And so we were fortunate to receive the grant and to be able to put this together, to be able to offer anyone who's either fighting a health challenge or knows somebody who is.
So can people buy the DVD? Is that, you make my voice kind of go to go, oh, I'm so, you're almost, you have the best voice. It's great. I can see
Thank
why you're
you.
The voice behind that.
Thank you. I try to stay there in that good space. And yes, actually, and we can talk about this again a little bit later on, but my website is www.drnancyonline.com. It's drnancyonline.com. Yep. And if you go there, you'll find a whole lot about this and a whole lot of other things. It's like the website's like a little library of audio recordings, video recordings, and articles. So if you can find your way to the DVD, have a look at it, because I just think it's so much, and it's fun. It's actually not totally serious, because if we're going to make changes through hypnosis, we have to be enjoying it.
Oh yeah, definitely. All right, so we'll post that in the network also, and again, for those following along on the web with us, you can go to Nancy's website, drnancyonline.com, and the doctor is DR, and then Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, and then online.com. So today what we're going to do for the hour is talk about happiness, and we want everyone to walk away with 10 tips for lasting happiness. So we really want you to walk away from this show today with a greater sense of peace, purpose, and happiness, and how to hopefully to be able to implement some of the things that you've learned on the show today in your own life or those around you. And if you need more help, to contact Dr. Nancy. I can't even begin. It would take the full hour to go through the list of programs that you've been on. You've been on every major program. On Twitter, you're TV Radio Doc. People can follow you on Twitter also. I notice you're not very active on Twitter. Do you like Twitter?
Well, you know, I like Facebook.
And okay.
I'm so busy that by the time I get through with Facebook and work, I don't have time to get to Twitter. Okay, so I like Twitter. I just don't get
Facebook. Yeah, Facebook or Twitter. I noticed you're on both, but, yeah, you're much more active on Facebook, so I wasn't sure. Okay, so let's talk about happiness. We really want people to learn the ways that research has proven to cause happiness. And that's anything from you talk about exercise, relationships, and things that people might – what's something people might not have thought of that goes with happiness?
Well, that's true. And last year in 2010, I pulled up the top 10 things that research had actually shown to cause happiness. And then I found a local expert, most of them are local experts, on each of those areas. So I found an exercise expert, a diet expert, one on social contacts and connections, one on each of the areas that we know cause happiness. And they all submitted articles for a book called The Top 10 Tips for Lasting Happiness. So as we talk about each one of those today, it's also available in a book summary format for anyone who's interested in finding out more about it. And Elizabeth, what happened was the way that this came about is that I was... maybe you can identify with this. I was a little bit too busy, had a little bit too much on my plate. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of sat down to listen to my own inner voice, my own inner guidance about what I might change or let go of. And they said, don't worry about anything but the Happiness Project, this sort of an inner sense of guidance. And I'm thinking, okay, now what's the Happiness Project? And as it evolved, it became a way of looking at what research has shown us in ways that we can really use these tips and these techniques. And I've always listened to my inner guidance when it comes to my career, so I thought, well, okay, I'm busy, but maybe this is the best way, you know, for me to be busy right now, is to focus on helping people educate themselves about happiness and how to bring that about. And one of the top things, one of the biggest things that we know about happiness is that it comes from within. Mm-hmm. And it's a choice, and it's sort of a way of being, it's a way of living, and a way of thinking. There's so many ways to be happy before you even leave the house in the morning, before you even get on your computer or do anything having to do with creating happiness. It's about the happiness that starts internally. And there, when we look at the definition of happiness, it's a state of joy, pleasure, or elation that is not continuous but shifts continually. It's a more automatic state for those conditioned to respond to life with happiness.
Now, do you think... Oh, can I interrupt you for 1 minute?
Yes. Yeah, please do.
Do you think that... So when you talk about happiness, I don't suffer from depression, but I do think a lot of people do. If you suffer from depression, can you follow... a pattern like that and say, okay, it's caused from within, it's a decision, it's learned optimism, it's things like that, to make yourself happy? Can you change depression like that, or do we need to move depression into its own category?
Well, depression can come from a couple of different sources. There is such a thing as a biochemical depression that needs to be treated in addition with attitude healing. In addition, it needs to be treated physically and biologically. But definitely a great deal of happiness can be caused by shifts in the thought patterns that are contributing to the depression. And Elizabeth, you mentioned learned optimism. There's a great deal to be said for learned optimism. We can choose, you know, to be positive about something or not. The president of the American Psychological Association, whose name is Martin Seligman, talked a great deal about learned optimism and the fact that it's something you can coach and train yourself to do. And another gentleman by the name of Daniel Amen, who wrote Stumbling into Happiness, piggybacked on that, and he identified what we call ANTS, Automatic Negative Thoughts, A-N-T-S.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that the brain continually generates negative thoughts.
Is that like, oh my gosh, I look ugly in the mirror, or these pants look make my rear end look too big? That is that the
yes.
automated? Okay.
Yes, I look terrible
girls are
in the
full
mirror.
Of those.
Yeah. Oh, women are so full. Oh, that's a whole other radio show. We'll talk.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll talk about that one. But it's, I'm never going to get this done on time. Why did that person not say hello to me? You know, it's our personal criticisms of ourselves and our just negative perceptions about the world. And, you know, people come in to see me as a psychologist and they say, how can I make that stop? And I tell them, you can't, it's automatic. What you do is you ignore it. You don't really give it any importance or any presence. You don't really take it and run with it, so to speak. So you don't take a negative thought and let it generate another negative thought and another negative thought. You sort of step back from that.
Yeah,
as we know, yeah, we've never done that.
No, never, ever, ever.
Never. But we know what that means.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the automatic negative thoughts, they're a function of the ego. The ego is constantly trying to repair itself and feel, you know, that we're just perfect just the way we are. And when we get any evidence from our world that we're not just perfect, the ego kicks in gear and starts saying negative things. So if someone's not giving you the attention you want, you immediately start generating negative thoughts about them or about yourself or about the world in general. And the best thing to do with those thoughts is to just acknowledge that that's just my mind chatter. It really does not deserve my attention. And to choose a deliberately choose a positive thought, deliberately choose to look at something and affirm something in a positive way so that the ants don't control your life.
Now, as an example of that, for example, something I did probably 4 or 5 years ago is I started, when I would get up in the morning, I was going through this, you know, I had all my children and things like that. I had 4 kids, and I was like, okay. I'd get up in the morning and be like, okay, I'm kind of fat. I'd weigh myself or something, like, you know what I mean? Those kinds of thoughts and get negative. And instead of going down that path, I decided to kind of write up on my mirror, actually. I put a list like, this body has given birth to 4 kids. You're really cute. You're really, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever positive things to kind of train your brain to do something different.
Yes.
Especially if you're in any kind of negative situation, or some of the people who are most unfortunate sometimes can be some of the happiest.
That's true.
It seems to depend on how you want to think about it.
You know, you touched on 2 things there that I think are so important. Some of the least fortunate people are the most unhappy, or I'm sorry, the most happy people. One of the happiest people that I knew was a blind amputee, if you can believe that. And you touched on something else, which is women criticizing their bodies. And, of course, we could do a whole show on that. And I do have one on that. But
I could keep you as a guest for a whole week.
Yeah, really? Well, that could be a week-long program.
You are not kidding.
And that women are sort of locked into this, I would be happy if only my body were perfect kind of thinking. And it's a way of giving your power away to something that you can't control, because the body can never be perfect. If it's perfect, if you get it to a point where it's perfect, it'll last about 5 minutes, and then, you know, something will change.
45.
Right. Something will shift. And
so,
we can't postpone happiness until our bodies are perfect.
Something, I'm quoting that, something will shift. That's awesome. Okay, anyway, yeah.
Something will shift. And so the goal of, you know, first of all, we women and I'm getting off a little bit on this and why it causes women to be unhappy, but women are unhappy about their bodies because they think that their bodies are supposed to be perfect. There's sort of this illusion that generates all these negative thoughts. Oh, my goodness, I look fat, I'm losing hair, you know, whatever it is that, that you're telling yourself. And it's based on the illusion that if I only had, then I would be happy instead of I'm going to be happy as you did. You put things on the mirror that made you feel better and got you out of the loop of I'll be happy when my body's perfect again, you know?
Yeah.
And so you just redirected yourself toward happy thinking. But if you can imagine, everybody has one of those. I would be happy if only I had. Mm-hmm. And look at how you finish the sentence. And then realize that that's what you're giving your power to. If I only had more friends, if I only had more time, if I only had lost weight, whatever it is that you're focusing on, that's the thing you're giving your power away to. And you won't have the power to make yourself happy if you keep doing that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people waste a lot of time and energy thinking, it's almost like a comparison with the neighbors kind of thing. Oh, they've got an Audi and I've got a Ford, or they've got a bigger house and mine's older, or their kids are, you know, off at Yale and mine are at the University of whatever state it is, you know, that kind of thing. And people do that. And you can get into that pattern of thinking and make yourself darn unhappy.
You certainly can. And, you know, you're talking about a word that's comparison. Comparison. Mm-hmm. Comparison makes people happy or unhappy. So if you compare yourself to the next person you run into, you're either going to come out better or worse than that person. You're either going to assess yourself.
50-50 shot, huh?
Yeah. You're either going to assess yourself as being luckier, smarter, richer, better than that person, or not. So anytime you compare, there's a risk involved.
Yeah.
And so comparison is not, because if you compare yourself to the first person you see and you come out better, the next person you see, you know, the odds are you won't. And then you'll start with the automatic negative thoughts again. So, yeah, you mentioned comparison. That really is one of the roadblocks that people trip over when they're trying to be happy.
Yeah, I think that's a biggie. Maybe we can maybe we'll keep going and maybe we'll come back to that one, because as women, those are the two things I've noticed that women do more than anything. And I know there's guys listening too, but I don't know, my husband's just kind of peacefully, blissfully happy all the time.
Well, can I mention something about that?
Yeah.
The difference is between men and women where happiness is concerned are that if you can imagine a wheel divided into sections, those are little compartments. And men have a lot of different compartments in their wheel. They have their work, and they have their appearance, and they have their relationships, and they have their athletic performance. And if they feel bad about themselves in one of those areas, it does not spill over into the others. So let's say a guy says, well, you know, I'm not a very good athlete, but I'm really happy in my marriage and I love my job. There's no spillover because men are capable of compartmentalizing. And this has to do with men's inability to multitask.
It's really their brain chemistry?
It's really their brain chemistry. Men do not multitask. And women perpetually ask me, does he really not see the garbage when he steps over it? And the answer is no.
No. Yeah.
No, because he's on his way to, you know, water the plants. He's not looking for the garbage. He's single tasking.
You know, I make the single biggest mess in the bathroom ever, probably every morning. I mean, and I'm aware of it, and, you know, I clean it up and everything, but while I'm making it, you know, with makeup and hair dryers and whatever is up there, you know, I looked at him the other day and I said, you know, you are just pretty awesome. And he's like, oh, yeah, why now? And I said, well, because he's an awesome guy. But I said, you know, I make this huge mess in the bathroom for 14 years now. And not once have you ever, ever complained. And he goes, oh, I didn't even notice it. Just now. And I'm like, oh,
because when he's when he's passing your bathroom, his agenda is not to inspect. His agenda is to pass your bathroom.
So now he's like, you better clean that up.
You shouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, shouldn't have said anything. But yeah, it's very interesting because girls, you know, I'll be darned, you know, if the, you know, I have blonde hair, if the, you know, if the black roots come through, the whole world is wrong.
Yes. If a woman feels bad about one area, whether it's her career or her social skills or her appearance or her relationships, it doesn't matter. If there's one thing that you feel bad about, then you feel bad about your whole self. Because we multitask. Okay. Our brains are not compartmentalized. And it's a blessing and a curse.
I'd love to know how do you teach people to you know, that is one thing that I've had to really teach myself as I've gotten older, to not let, we call it spiraling out of control, where, mm-hmm. you know, one tiny thing sets off, you know, somebody looks at you wrong, you know, the whole day is shot, you know, and that's a bad place to be in, you know, when everything goes wrong because of one little thing. Can you teach women to get out of their own way there?
Well, we can't change the fact that we're multitaskers, so kind of knowing that and accepting that, you know, is a prerequisite, but just recognizing the ants, the automatic negative thoughts, and just absolutely redirecting and making a choice to be happy because you're happy, not because, you know, your life is perfect, which is a joke.
I keep saying that. If your life's perfect, holler at me because I really want to interview somebody on the show whose life is just perfect.
Let's look for that person.
Yeah, if you find them, let me know. In the meantime,
I'll
have the imperfect show. We were talking about research. I know you have done a lot of research. Can you keep going with some of the research that, you know, proves, you know, things that prove to cause happiness? What are things that are proven?
Yes.
That make people happy? Because maybe people,
you know,
can latch onto those.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to start with the social connections a little bit here. And because I want to make sure we talk about the most important things and get those up on the table here today. If you look at the research, often when people are looking at external causes of happiness, they have to do with the social connections in a person's life. And social connections create a lot of different benefits. They actually produce longevity. People with a lot of positive social connections have better health. They actually get better more quickly when they're sick, and they respond to treatments, post-surgical healing treatments much better because they have these other social connections in their lives. And it's not just a perception that you're not alone in the world, which of course is important, but there's a sense of interconnectedness among people. And I'm going to go on for a little while here, so please interrupt me if you want to. The idea that we're all connected means that your happiness actually affects my happiness. And there was some research done around this, and then I'll tell you about the research, and then we'll get to what's called the proximity effect. But the research was done in 1952 on an island in Japan when they were actually observing monkeys. And what they were observing was that these monkeys would drop sweet potatoes on the ground and then eat them without washing them off. Well, one day, the scientists witnessed an 18-month-old female by the name of Emo take her potato and wash it off in a stream before eating it. And simultaneously, all of the other monkeys on the island started doing the same thing. Now, we might hypothesize that perhaps they had witnessed her, you know, adopting this new behavior. But what they discovered was that there were monkeys on other islands surrounding them at that same time who began washing their potatoes before they ate them. So this became the 100th monkey theory. And it became the idea that if enough people have a thought or learn something or know something, that it sort of has a spillover effect onto other people. Now, how does this affect happiness is very critical, because there's an effect that's been found with happiness called the proximity effect. And, Elizabeth, what that means is that if I have five happy friends and you're my friend and you have five happy friends, even if I have never met your friends and don't know them, I'm going to experience a greater level of happiness. Now, if your five friends and my five friends each go out and find five happy friends, so now we're talking about 25 more happy friends on both sides here, you and I will also be positively impacted by these five happy friends. And it goes out three levels. So my five happy friends and their five happy friends and their five happy friends affect our levels of happiness. So if I have all of those, then it spills over onto you. And if you have those happy friends, it spills over onto me. Even if we don't talk about them, even if I don't know them, don't even know their names, there's something called a proximity effect. And it reminds me so much of the 100th monkey theory, because what it means is that we're sort of a collective. We think of ourselves as individuals, but we're collective, and we're all related to one another and one another's happiness. And it kind of reminds me that we sort of have a responsibility to take care of our happiness, because it actually affects those around us.
When you say happy, do you mean like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy, you know, like kind of thing, or you know, like cheerleader happy level, or do you mean like just peaceful, you know, just generally, you know, nothing too crazy wrong? Because I have a thing that I do when I have a trouble come my way, as I've gotten older, and I don't know if I'm that old, but I'm, you know, 42 and kind of my 28, 29, 30-year-old self, I said to myself, when something comes my way, I'm going to evaluate it on and really have a conscious thought about how crazy what is happening is. Is it life-threatening? Is it urgent? Is it causing blood bleeding? You know, especially with kids, like if somebody falls, you look at them and go, okay, are you bleeding? No. Okay, are you going to be okay? Yes. You know, kind of thing. And do you think that is a way to mark whether something might make you happy or unhappy?
Really? Yes. Assessing the seriousness of it on a scale from 1 to 10. When people tell me their problems, as they do, I'm a psychologist, I say, how serious is this on a scale from 1 to 10? And
because
that helps
people's levels are off. Like a bobby pin might fall out of somebody's hair, and that might be catastrophic to Susie down the street, but to me, I'd be like, guess so.
Right. And, you know, it reminds me of the definition of happiness. It's a state of joy, pleasure, or elation that is not continuous. It's in a constant state of shift. And people who are programmed to see things, to see the glass half full, will do that. And you kind of caught yourself at a critical point and said, I'm going to choose to do that. That's just exactly how I want to live my life. And other people, no matter how good things are for them, they tend to focus on what's wrong, what's not okay. And some of that is related to basic survival instinct. It's because it's not the things I know are okay that are going to get me. It's the thing I'm not paying attention to that's going to jump up and bite me.
That's like a fear-based kind of thing.
Yes. It's a fear-based, if I don't keep my attention on this thing that's not right, I won't be able to fix it, and it could get worse, and I need to, yeah. It's a fear-based way of living, and that's what people do. And, you know, our most basic instinct is survival. So if you're operating from survival, then you're going to be stuck in that mode. And, if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the most basic needs are the survival needs. And then as we move up, you know, we have social needs and so on. And then at the very highest level of need is the need for self-realization, self-actualization, happiness, so to speak. And if a person is at the level of worrying about survival, they're not really able to get up the ladder to looking at the manifestation of happiness.
Yeah. And do you think, okay, so I'm gonna keep asking my silly questions, and either they work or they don't. But do you think when you talk about, like, just basic survival, when you say that to me, I think about somebody who is really struggling to make their ends meet, like their bills. And I don't know, for some reason I kind of go there. So, you know, I've been there before as a college student or as a younger adult, where you just charging on credit cards for groceries, even, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be happy, you know, maybe when you're in that mode. Or, you know, for example, I wonder how happy a person might be who has just lost their job or their home, or, you know, we had somebody here a few months ago, their child died and they drowned in the river. So it's hard to pick yourself up by your bootstraps and just be happy. Do you have any advice for when something really crappy comes along?
Really tragic.
It doesn't even have to be really tragic. It could be just a moment in time, you know, maybe a this too shall pass kind of moment, where right now it really stinks because you don't have a job, or your house is in foreclosure or something like that. But do you have any tools to help people see past the crud to get to the good spot?
To the good part. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you're really positioning the question, are successful people happier, you know? And what we know is, and based on my observations as well as on the research, you might have a family of four living on $45,000 and pretty much managing their bills and keeping up with their expenses. And then you might have a single couple, childless couple, making $500,000 a year, and they're in extraordinary debt.
Yeah.
And what is interesting is, even in my practice, what I found is the families of four making $45,000 always pay their bill. And the ones with $500,000 of income are the ones that are most likely to be negligent or not pay their bill at all. Now, what does this say? Does money cause happiness? This, you're asking a really big question, and we'll talk about mishaps in life as well as losing your job or having your house foreclosed, because those are related to money specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And money is very, very much perceptual. So that, again, the family on the $45,000 income, their perception of what they need to be happy is extremely different than the millionaire with an arsenal of cars in the, you know, in the back garage that they don't drive.
Cars. I love
arsenal.
That.
Yeah, arsenal.
Arsenal.
arsenal
of cars.
Arsenal of cars that they don't drive, but that they're very expensive to maintain and keep up, that put them into debt despite their level of income, and then they don't have money for the small things in life, you know.
Yeah.
So the relationship between success and money is not really there. And one thing we know that will encourage people is that those who have a goal of simply making a whole lot of money and being wealthy for the sake of being wealthy are not happy. Those are people who do not report levels of happiness at all.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would do much for you.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we look at the idea of success and how people measure their success, I've got people who come in to see me simply because they're laid off, and what that does to their whole self-perception. They're not coming to see me to find a job or to help them with a resume. They're coming because their self-perception has dropped so dramatically. And looking at sort of how you define yourself, if you're defining yourself by your success, you're in a very at-risk position, because if how you define yourself falls through, then you lose yourself.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a really good point.
And so success, and with women, you know, that has a lot to do with appearance, and with success, the thing about success related to happiness is that when you first set a goal to succeed at something, you're generally very happy. You're excited about the outcome. You can really picture that outcome, whether it's getting a job or finding a house or whatever it is you set out to do. You can see that outcome, and that imagery makes you happy. When you reach the goal, you're equally happy, even more happy. But in between, when you're doing the hard work, there's a definite dip in how people assess their level of happiness. So while you're plodding along toward the goal, not so happy.
Now, do you think that there's a it's funny, I forgot what I was going to say. That's a good thing to do on the radio.
Let me think
what I was going to say. Do you think there is a, have you ever met the critter who just can't stop wanting more and more and more? Like, It's kind of the critter who's like, I'll be happy when, I'll be happy, you know, but it's a strange thing. Like, they keep climbing for more and more and more, but never, they don't seem to ever be satisfied.
Well, they're not satisfied because they're living in a future-oriented happiness, and we're never going to be in the future. We're always going to be in the present.
It's a buzzed. I met somebody like that the other day, and I could recognize it right away. It was because I like to achieve things myself. You know, I like to. I'm just like everybody else. You know, I might want a book to come out, or I might want a, you know, I'll set goals and I'll achieve things. But there seems to be a difference between somebody who might set a goal for themselves and people who are just constantly, like, it feels like some people like bounce off of other people's heads to climb to a certain spot that they think they're going to get to. And I'm not talking about anybody in particular or anything like that. I'm just, I've just met some people that are, I don't know if I'm making quite sense with the question,
yes.
But this doesn't seem like a satisfied level where you're like, okay, I have enough.
Well, exactly. And the problem generally is not living in the present. And you asked me if people can sort of maintain a level of sort of inner peace and happiness. It is primarily connected to living in the present, not in the past and not in the future. And you can achieve actually inner peace with whatever the conditions are in your life if you're sort of here right now, consciously focused on your life in the moment. Because the people you're talking about, they can never be here. They always have to be where with what they don't have, giving their power away to what they don't have and fearing that they won't be able to acquire it. So it's a very fear-based awareness.
It's a bucket list kind of thing. What do you think of a bucket list? And I'm going to go on to exercise and things like that in a second here, because there's so many things that you and I can talk about, but when people have this bucket list and it's got like 100 things on it of things that they need to do before they die, is that a goal or is that a spot of unhappiness?
Well, it's a way of saying I have a limited amount of time, funds, and energy. What is it that I want to do so that I feel complete before I leave? How is it that I want to direct my time, funds, and energy? And what's most important to me? And so in a way, it's like focusing with the awareness that I might not get through the list, but at least I know where my focus is.
I like that. I really like the way you put that, because I know that since that movie came out, a lot of people have bucket lists. And to me, sometimes throwing a pipe dream out there, like, oh, you know, before I die, I want to live in, you know, Hawaii or something, you know, whatever, or
right.
Live there, whatever, something that I know I'll never really achieve. It's people have funny bucket lists, and I just wonder sometimes if your bucket list is so far out there, if it's a source of, like, frustration if you don't achieve something that's on there. So
good,
I think
question.
You just said it. Yeah.
Yeah, good question, because it actually, you know, speaking of happiness, your goals and how reachable they are actually define your self-esteem. So let's say that you would like to live in another city in the U.S. somewhere, in the continental U.S., and maybe that's an attainable goal. Maybe you have a career that might allow you to transfer. So if that goal is attainable, you will be more likely to feel that you can reach it, enhancing your self-esteem. If you set your goal too high, and can't reach it, the gap between what you want and what's the reality is so great that the self-esteem drops and the happiness drops.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. You just put it eloquently.
Thank you.
I noticed that. Yeah, no, I love the way you just said that because I know I'm not you and I'm not trained the way you are and things like that, so I might not put everything in, you know, in as perfectly phrased ways. But I know that feeling, though, of setting something so high and looking at it and going, you know what, I better scale that back a little so that I don't spin in frustration, anxiety, or unhappiness.
Exactly.
And I've done that before. I think everybody has done that before where you say, okay, little kids do it sometimes. You know, I'm going to be the president of the United States. And then you get to be about 40 and you go, okay. I'm not, or whatever.
And, or not, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a whole, the whole science of self-esteem is based on setting attainable goals.
Okay.
Absolutely. And how you feel about yourself is your happiness. You know, that's mm-hmm. living in the moment with who you are right, you know, right here and now. If you look at the Dalai Lama, the man is exiled, but he's continually happy. He has no home. He has no, you know, and this is a man who has mastered happiness. And there's a chemistry to it. The more that you train your brain to be happy, the more your brain goes down that road. It becomes an automatic response. Whatever you train your brain to do is what it's likely to continue to do. And people who actually meditate on a regular basis enhance the frontal lobe of the brain, and they develop this ability to be happy and be in a state of inner peace all the time. So you can actually train your brain to do this.
Yeah, I think I so totally agree with that. I mean, I don't think everybody will be happy 100% of the time, because I think there's things that make you unhappy, but generally speaking, you can live a life of pretty darn happy. You know, you can live that life if you, I think you have to just, like you're saying, just think it. It's a real, a lot of the times it's a real conscious decision whether to look in the mirror and go, God, my butt looks fat, or wow, I'm looking pretty hot. It's a
right.
choice, you know, kind of thing.
Right, and as you said, you know, criticizing your body, but saying, but then again, it gave me these four beautiful children.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's
or
a price
money,
to pay.
You know. Yeah, or, you know, I might not be able to, you know, sometimes you go into the store and you look at, you know, that blender versus that blender, and you're going to buy the one that's less expensive because that's what you can afford. But, you know, if the neighbors have the other blender, well, God bless them then. Make them, I'm glad they're happy, you know, kind of thing. And there's another component here that I have found, and that's also being happy for other people.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's genuinely a challenge, isn't it?
Being happy for other people instead of looking at somebody and saying, well, I'm pulling stuff out of the sky here. I know you can tell that. Mm-hmm. But instead of saying, oh, they have an Audi and I have a Ford, not to knock either one, they're both great cars. But, you know, instead of doing that, saying, I'm happy that you drive that. I hope you're having fun.
And you know, exactly.
Bingo.
And, you know, to look at it, with having more means you have more responsibility. Where I drive my car to my office, my downtown office, the spaces are real narrow and everybody's car gets nicked and dinged. And I think if I had that Audi, I wouldn't want to park here.
Sure,
you know. Yeah, reframing that when you have more responsibility. You know, that Audi has to be washed differently and cleaned differently and waxed differently, and the engine needs maintained differently, and you have to park it differently. There's so much responsibility that comes with having more. And people get obsessed with maintaining the stuff they have. The more stuff they have, you know, they become obsessed with taking care of it, and they're not happy having it.
You know, I drive the French fry mobile. I'm not kidding. It's called the French fry mobile. It is a white Toyota Sienna minivan, and I have driven it into the side of the garage trying to park it in the garage. It's got a nice ding up the side of it. It's got every kind of baseball bat, basketball, but mostly what it has on the floor. Every once in a while, you will encounter a dead French fry. And it is a running joke with the car and four kids and all of their friends and everything. You look down, not one person ever gets in the car and doesn't spot a dead French fry. It's such a joke with the car. But are we happy? Yeah, you know, this thing has driven us all over the place. I mean, that car right now, we have no car payment, which makes us ecstatic. It runs perfectly. It's got new tires. And it's driven us all over the darn country. We moved that car. I think we're going to dip that car in gold at some point. Bronze it or something. Because it's moved with us from California to Maine. It's done everything. And, but, you know, that's an example of just, you know, happy.
You know, it really is. And that's happy in the present. That's happy right now with exactly what you have and the meaning that's attached to that automobile. You know, the one that's sitting in the arsenal that gets taken out once a year does not have those kinds of fun attachments to it.
It needs some dead French fries. All right.
Yeah, it does. Are you donating?
Go through the roof with my dead French fries. All right. So, talking about French fries, let's go into. I got to check time here and see how much time we have too, because I know we're going on. Eating and exercise is. French fries are not the key. Well, they could be the key to happiness. I'm not quite certain they're not, but exercise and eating well seems to go with happiness in a huge, major way. I don't know if you're a nutritionist or, you know, those types of things, but I'm sure you see enough people in your practice to talk food for a little bit with us and exercise.
Sure. Well, I'm a health psychologist, so I can speak to that. The exercise, let me start with exercise, because that's a little bit easier, believe it or not, for people to master. There's a chemical reaction in the brain. Actually, this month's issue, the entire issue of the American Psychological Association Journal, is devoted to the positive mental health effects of exercise. That's how critical and front and center this is as an issue now. And the oxygen that you take in when you exercise actually induces the brain chemicals that create happiness. And if you exercise every day, you actually keep that benefit. So if you exercise, for example, over a six-month period of time on a pretty much daily basis, the benefit of that happiness rush, so to speak, stays with you. You don't have to recreate it every day. But the good news is, even if you don't exercise, if you start exercising, you will get a change and a benefit within 15 minutes.
Really?
Yes.
That makes me want to go join a health club.
Well, or, you know, just take a walk around the block. You know, it doesn't have to be fancy. Just take a walk around the block, and within 15 minutes you start bringing enough oxygen in to create some shifts in chemistry. But if you do it regularly, you get to keep those benefits. So exercise is critical. And, you know, people who have limitations, who have health issues that prevent them from exercise, often report higher levels of depression. Sorry.
Yeah, I see that too. Even with just having children and things like that, just that when the body going from heavier to trying to lose weight to newborn baby to, you know, any kind of, you know, where you're just taking care of people and things like that, or trying to take care of yourself with any kind of anything, depression creeps up. You know, I wanted to know. Okay. Can we talk a little bit? Let me see what else we wanted to talk about. We want to talk about gratitude. We talked about social contacts and things like that, and proximity. We talked about that. Can we talk about, let's see if you would talk about people in the hospital. Would you do that for me?
Okay, because what would you like?
This is totally off our topic, but my dad was just in the hospital for over 40 days. He was in the ICU unit of the hospital in Burnsville, Minnesota, and they're wonderful. We noticed that there were quite a few people who passed away. And we noticed that it seemed like the ones who made it through the ICU, if there was hope that they could make it through there, were the ones that had family around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever do any research on keeping people happy? There are a lot of people in the hospital. There are a lot of people sick, and you mentioned it, so I just kind of wanted to go with it for mm-hmm. a minute, but sick or injured or, you know, perhaps in a wheelchair or something like that. Can you talk about how happiness is around you and how to reach for it or how to help someone else be happy in a situation?
Okay. It's a big topic. Let me see what.
I know. It's 10 minutes.
That's okay. We'll do our best. It has to do, well, first of all, people who have people around them heal faster. They just do, from the social connection. People who are ill, who have faith, also have something going for them, because there are so many studies on faith and religion and how it affects people's healing and whether it, you know, they heal more quickly because of that. Attitude, of course. Now, if a person says, oh, I'm never going to make it out of here, chances are that they won't. Mm-hmm. I tell people, if your doctor tells you is about to tell you what your chances are of survival, tell him to stop. Do not ever listen to statistics. And I will say, in the year 2000, I was diagnosed with end-stage leukemia with a poor prognosis for survival, and they told me that I had the only kind of cancer that was curable, but it would take 4 years to cure, and I wouldn't be likely to survive the treatment. So I said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, that's not what's going to happen to me, and I was in remission in 23 days.
Yeah, I bet. That's
yeah.
kind of my dad.
If
you would have been there, you would have studied it. What happened? Because this is a man who, you know, he had kidney cancer, and they were like, okay, you're probably not going to survive this operation because of your strokes and all the stuff. My dad just looked at him like, who are you to tell me that? I'm going to be just fine.
Exactly.
I've got so many kids and grandkids and a wife, and good luck trying to get rid of me because it's never going to happen. And
well, he has
I'll
a reason
you,
to live.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And I'll tell you, he was in the ICU and someone had made a medical error and it caused him to be in the ICU a little bit longer than he should have been. But even on a ventilator and even on everything, the doctors still today are like, you know, I think that might be the only person we've ever seen smile on a ventilator. He like fought to smile on a ventilator. It was just he's to be studied, I swear, because his sense of purpose, life, and happiness. My dad, his name's James Hamilton, and he listens to the show sometimes, but he's fascinating.
People who say, I have a reason to live, and I'm not done with that purpose. I have a reason to be here. I'm not going anywhere. He's saying I have a family. I have a life. I'm not leaving it. You know, I was saying, well, I have a purpose here. I have things that I need to do in the world, and yeah. I'm not going to be gone until I do them. Yeah, that sense of holding on to life is an extremely powerful factor.
Have the things that you've learned, when you were diagnosed with that, did you just draw on everything that you've ever learned in life and then learn even more to keep yourself alive and happy and where you are today?
You know, that's so true, because I have been teaching healing and visualization and self-hypnosis and all of these things for many years when I got sick. And it was like, okay, now it's time to use them.
Yeah.
Now it's time to apply all of these things. It's time to draw little pictures of healthy cells and visualize each individual cell in your body being healthy. It's time to know absolutely that you're going to get well. It's time to apply faith and belief. It's time to really use everything you know to get better. So, yes, it not only, even though I believed all of the things I had been sharing with other people, I had the chance to experience it in a way that was definitely life-changing, most definitely life-changing.
Yeah, and I really just witnessed it with my mom and dad, and my mom didn't even leave his side. You know, we rotated through while he was in the ICU, because there were some days where it was really scary, and the whole family was crying, and you know, there were some days that weren't so great, and we were all worried if he really was going to make it. But there's such a there's such a positive energy. It's hard to really describe, but when you get 20 people in a room and they're all like, we're not letting you go anywhere, the energy flows. What is that? Is that really energy?
Yes, it is really and truly energy. That is why prayer works, because you are projecting positive healing energy and light to an individual's energy field that flows through every cell of their body. So it is absolutely energetically occurring. You're so right.
I want to introduce you to someone if you don't already know him. There's a guy out there by the name of Gabe Berman, and he wrote this book called Live Like a Fruit Fly. And he is.
I've heard the title.
Have you heard it? Yeah.
I heard the title because I remembered it.
He's a good friend of mine. Yeah, really, really great guy. And he is all about positive energy and prayer. And he'll ask people if they need a miracle. And he's got, like, wonderful positive energy flowing in the universe through social media and through just talking to, he's just a really neat person. But he's a real big person about happiness and, living in the present and things like that. So his book is endorsed by the powers that be, and it's just a great read and a great book, and he's a really great person. So maybe I'll do that, and he'll introduce you guys on Facebook so you can talk to him. I think you really would. Okay, let me check time here. What time do we have? We have 4 minutes. What in the last 4 minutes of this wonderful show about happiness would you like to talk about? We can go anywhere with 4 minutes.
Yeah. I want to talk about not trying too hard to be happy. We'll talk about the antithesis. A lot of people who work with me are missing this final step in happiness. You have to know what makes you happy. You have to move toward creating it, hold the right thoughts, and then you have to let it go. Whenever you're trying to manifest something, you get up today, you do what you can do toward that goal, you visualize it done exactly the way you want it done, and then you have to let it go. Things do not manifest when we hold on to them too tightly. So trying too hard to be happy actually works against you. So put out what you want, do what you need to do to get there, hold the right thoughts, and then know that it's coming. And don't hold on to it and constantly check to see if the pot is boiled.
Exactly. That's a good point. How do you know if the pot is overflowing with boiling water, though? How do you know if you're holding on too hard? Is that where you might fall back into unhappiness because your happiness hasn't arrived yet?
Yes. For example, I have a lady who's involved in a legal situation right now, and instead of taking the actions today that she can, visualizing it, working out, and letting it go, she holds it in her mind all day and worries about it and ruminates. So no matter, even if it's a problem, you've got to do what you can do and let it go.
Can we do a show? Can I schedule another show with you about worrying?
Okay.
Worrying is like an art form. Maybe it only needs to be a half an hour. Maybe it needs to be 4 hours. I'm not sure. But worrying is a great source of unhappiness, too. I think that'd be a neat show. Okay, so we have just a few minutes. I want to make sure people can find you again on your website. So it's Dr. Nancy Rammer. Got it
no,
right.
No, yes. No. It's actually Dr. It's Dr. Nancy. There's no period after there. It's Dr. Nancy online.
Okay, but your name is Dr. Nancy Rammer.
Yes.
And your TV radio doc on Twitter and your drnancyonline.com. And people can find you in our network. People can find you at the Motivation Marathon. You're going to be a speaker at the Motivation Marathon, which is January 14th through the 22nd, which is motivationmarathon.com. And it's just a pleasure to have some time with you. It's been a great hour, and I'm sure people will walk away with many valuable tools from this today. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, you're so welcome, and I'm happy you're just having talked to you today.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll follow up in the network, and please visit us at besteveryou.com. And, again, please take a moment, if you haven't already, and register for the Motivation Marathon. We have 48 or so experts and celebrities coming on board January 14th through the 22nd to just share their expertise. It's promising to be a great event. It's motivationmarathon.com, and the event is free, and all the speakers are free, and it's going to be a great 9 or 10 days with everyone. So thank you, Dr. Nancy.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everyone. All right. Talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.